So now, after the client leaves the office, they're going to bring the documents, or the attorney is going to submit the documents to the Secretary of State, and Sarah will discuss filing issues with our office and other considerations.
Thank you, Carmen. So good afternoon. As Carmen said, I'm Sarah Wagner. I'm one of the staff attorneys with the Secretary of State's office. This is going to be a very, very brief overview. Brianna will be going into more detail regarding the topics we're going to cover. Hopefully this provides a insight from our perspective, the filing office, whereas Jennifer definitely can give some more guidance as to the specifics and kind of the internal workings of these entities. Despite what people think, we are a state agency, but we do pride ourselves on customer service. We do want to be helpful, so we're always trying to keep that in mind.
Are you implying that other state agencies don't?
I'm saying we're the best.
No.
They all do.
We take pride in our customer service.
We really do. So we're going to go over entity names, essentially the standard for that. Along with that, we'll go over assumed names. I'm not going to read the slide, but I guess I kind of am. Foreign entities, registered agents, LLPs, those types of things. And again, keeping in mind the perspective from our office, and Brianna will be going into it in a little more detail. Okay, so entity names. So the Secretary of State's office will determine the availability of legal and fictitious names. Essentially, that does not mean that an entity name that's on file with our office has no other issues, meaning that it is an absolute right that once you get on file with our office, you don't have any other issues, right? So something to keep in mind with that is that our records, it's basically a way to categorize our records. Again, it doesn't mean that you have a superior right. And going along with that, there are certain names that will not be considered during a name availability search. So essentially, Section 5.053 of the Business Organizations Code and Chapter 79 of the Administrative Code is what guides us in terms of determining if a name is available, and we'll get to the three-tier review that we go through. We don't take into consideration assumed names, LLPs, state and federal trademarks, filings with the county clerk, and common law use. That doesn't mean that you may not have an issue with it, but what we try to tell people is before you've printed your business cards, before you've put the sign on the door, make sure that you're going and doing a search of these separate records as well. So the name availability standard, and again, it's found in the statute of the Business Organizations Code in these sections in Chapter 5. And then the more detailed provisions are provided for in Chapter 79 of the Administrative Code. So essentially, it's a three-tier review, and the standard is if a name is distinguishable. And what we mean by that is a filing entity name must be distinguishable in the records of our office from any other existing domestic or foreign filing entity, name reservation, name registration, or fictitious name. So going along those lines, what does that mean? If something is distinguishable in the records, that means it's available. We've decided that, again, for purposes of our records, it is available. If a name is the same, it would not be available, and it would not be able to come in, or if it's a foreign entity, it would need to choose a fictitious name. And then the third tier is available with consent, and we'll go into that a little bit more. So here are examples of names that are distinguishable in the records. And again, we're basically saying that there is some sufficient difference between a proposed name and an existing name in our records such that it would not create any type of conflict, again, in our records. So these are some examples of when a name would be, two names would be distinguishable in the records. So I won't go through all of them, but keyword is a good one to keep in mind. If there's a difference of a keyword, meaning a word that is substantive, so not an article, a preposition, a conjunction, something like that, a substantive word. So like United versus United Services. Services being a substantive word, right there the names would not be a conflict in our records. And going along the lines of the rest of the examples, if words are the same but in a different order, there's contractions of keywords, those types of things. These are examples, again, that are found in the administrative rules of what we would consider distinguishable. And this is not an exhaustive list. So names that are the same. Essentially, what that means is that our office would conclude that a comparison of a proposed name and existing name essentially reveals no differences. If a name is the same, a proposed name, then we would not allow it to come in, even with consent. So here, and these are actually pretty much, I mean, it's, I never want to say exhaustive, because again, being an attorney, it kind of depends, but these are the main conditions that create when a name would be the same. So if you have the use of uppercase or lowercase letters, I mean, I think that makes kind of sense, right? The use of punctuation. So if you have A period, C period, E period versus ACE, those two would not be distinguishable. They'd be considered the same. And then our third tier are names that are available with consent. So essentially, we're saying that they're kind of similar, they're not similar enough, but they're still similar enough that will require consent from an existing entity. So again, there are certain conditions that will apply, and these are the examples. So for instance, the third one there, names are the same except for the singular, plural, or possessive form. So if you have Austin Home versus Austin Homes, and Austin Homes is the existing entity, Austin Home would need to get consent from Austin Homes, from the existing entity.